It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's better than this, guys, being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Tuesday Takes on Takes edition of the show. It's fun because at the end of last week's Takes on Takes, we introduced the phrase tattle takes, and we've got several good ones to get in here today. As always, Kyle, welcome.
I was going to say, I feel like all we have is tattle takes.
Yeah, we got five.
I feel like people would really embrace the concept of the tattle take. So this may need its own show at some point.
Just tattle takes on takes and tattle takes.
Takes on.
We have five. Five of the 14 this week are tattle takes.
Cue the Philip Rivers "Let's Go" GIF.
All right, you want the first one?
Let's go. Give me one.
All right, here we go. From Trevor Joseph at Stats by Trev. He says, when it's all said and done, Rennell Wren will become a top five interior defensive lineman of the 2019 class, thanks to his ferocity and vehemency at the point of attack. Hashtag new vocabulary for Joe. Hashtag takes on takes. Do you know what both those words mean?
Ferocity. The base word is ferocious, which means mean. Right. And vehemency, which the base word is vehement, which means with emphasis. Aggressively. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah.
All right.
We nailed down the vocab today. It's great.
Yeah, it feels good.
I'll see if I can't wrap in a big word at some point before the end of the show. I like Rennell Wren, but top five in this year's class is a little aggressive just because Rennell does have such a long way to go as it relates to weaponizing his skills, if that makes sense. He's got these long arms. He's got this powerful punch, but he belly bumps guys too much. And I think you think about the interior defensive line group this year with Quinnen Williams and Christian Wilkins and Jeffrey Simmons. And if you're going to include Rayshon Gary in that group, and if you're going to include Charles Omenihue in that group and Dexter Lawrence and Jerry Tittle, you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's a battle of attrition as far as narrowing and whittling to a top five. And I think Wren's going to be really good, but I think top five is just a little too rich because there's just so much talent. And he has a longer way to go than those guys do. Next tape comes from Michael Christopher. Do we get a lot of takes from Michael? I feel like we do.
I don't know.
I read the names. Like, I don't read the handles. I read the names. And I feel like that's a name we see pretty often.
Well, thank you. I don't know if that's true or not. But
I don't know if that's true. And if it's not, then Michael, you can't be mad, dude. I just gave you a ton of credit for something you didn't do if it's not true. But we got this take like at the 11th hour, Joe. We're getting ready to record. This one came in quickly, or right at the buzzer. When it's all said and done, Marquise Brown will go top 12 in this draft because speed kills and he is a DeSean Jackson clone. Maybe Bills or Packers take him or a team trading back. Takes on takes.
I think if he didn't have the Liz Frank injury, I do think he'd be a top 12 pick. I would say that that's true.
You think top 12 then? Wow.
Yeah, I do. But he has a Liz Frank injury and he's 166 pounds. And I think that's going to work against him in a big way. I do think there's speed does kill, and guys like Tyreek Hill have certainly done well to open the door for a guy like Marquise Brown to be at the top half of the first round pick. I just don't think with that injury, we're going to be able to comfortably say that he'd be a top 12 pick.
Specifically, you mentioned the Bills and Packers. I think the Packers would be more likely because I think they can use that speed guy. Where the Bills, I mean, between Robert Foster and John Brown, you feel like they kind of have that skill set to a degree. So I don't know. I'm gonna say pass on this in terms of him being a top 12
now,
pick.
Joseph, real quick, if that were to have materialized, if he was not hurt, would you have believed in November when you and I went to Morgantown to watch Oklahoma, West Virginia, would you have believed me if I told you we would have seen three top 20 players on the field play that night?
Would it be Kyler, Marquise Brown, and
Cody Ford? Yeah.
Well, I probably would have believed you on Cody Ford, but not on Kyler maybe Marquise Brown.
If I told you three, you'd be like,
yeah, I probably would
make it the hell.
I'd say, no, give me the under. I would have said, give me the under for sure. This one here comes from F. Banity. He says, this take shouldn't be so hot based on tape. DeAndre Baker and Miles Sanders are the most underrated players in the draft. Top 15 players. Also, Pop-Tarts are akin to eating cardboard with jam.
Okay. Most underrated players in the draft, DeAndre Baker and Miles Sanders. I like Miles Sanders. I think here's an interesting kind of counter question for you, Joe. Do you think lack of tape is a problem for Miles Sanders? Like, do you think people would hold him in higher regard if he played more than just like 1 year's worth of starts?
For me, not at all. I got an entire season of him as a starter getting a heavy workload. So I'm comfortable with Josh Jacobs as my RB1 with even less tape potentially.
Do you feel like the general perception could feel that way?
Maybe, but maybe. I don't know why. I don't know why. I wouldn't understand why.
Because he's just kind of late to the game. I think the public perception of him probably is a little skewed because he's a one-year starter. But he was behind Saquon Barkley. Like, you know what I mean? So I do think he's underrated. I actually think they're both overrated, but I understand why there's apprehension with DeAndre Baker. There's a lot of like whispers about DeAndre and work ethic and those sorts of things can really make you gun shy on a player. And I don't think there's any question that DeAndre is super talented. He's my second rated corner in this year's class. If you play him, he's not universal. I don't want him in off man at all. He's either going to have to play deep third or he's going to have to play preferably press man coverage. But if you play him in those situations, he can be really, really good. So I guess perhaps like if you're trying to poke holes in these guys and you say, well, Sanders was only a one-year starter and Baker's not a universal player. He's kind of scheme dependent and to a certain degree. I could see why you could craft and build criticisms around these players, but I also think top 15 is pretty rich. Baker, for me, I think I'm one of the highest guys I know on DeAndre Baker. I think I have him like 20, 19 on my big board, something like that. So he's close, but Sanders for me is a solid second-round pick. I don't necessarily think he's a top 15 player. No comment on Pop-Tarts. Sorry. I don't want to open up another can of worms, you know? Joe, you have the prestigious honor of handling Richard Torres' first take.
All right.
His first ever take. The Raiders are cash poor, which is why they couldn't extend Mac or sign Bell. They will trade up to the number 2 pick, give up 6-24 and a 2023 for Nick Bosa, so they don't have to give signing bonuses and fifth-year options to three players at the same time. Takes on takes. I like this take.
Yeah, this is good. This cash poor thing is so interesting when you mention the Raiders because, like, you hear that, but then they're paying John Gruden $10 million a season. They just handed out big money to Antonio Brown and Trent Brown. I don't know if there's any, like, how much truth is there to this cash poor thing with the Raiders? It doesn't seem to inhibit them in any way. But I think there is some merit to. I mean, it's kind of a good problem to have three players that you'd be considering fifth-year options for. Like, this is a situation they wanted. They wanted those three first-round picks. But, you know, if they feel like they've done enough with the other moves they've made this offseason that they can kind of package some things together and move up, then I think that would make a lot of sense. But at the same time, why would the 49ers trade away from Nick Bosa? I think that's what's hard for me to.
Well, somebody started a rumor that they're receptive to that yesterday,
which is literally the day after. Who was it? Was it Daniel Jeremiah tweeted, "Remember, everything you hear for the next 2 weeks is a lie."
Well, everything we've been hearing for the last 2 months is a lie. What difference does it make?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like if you're the 49ers, we've been talking about this being a dream come true that Arizona is going to go with Kyler Murray and Nick Bosa is going to fall right into their laps. And then they're going to trade away from it.
Mel Kiper and Todd McShay both allude to a 49ers trade back with Nick Bosa on the board.
That would be weird to me.
I'm just saying.
I think Richard, I think this is a good take. I think that there's a lot of merit to it. I'm surprised because of the reasons I said, mostly from the 49ers perspective. But I get what you're coming from. And if this cash poor thing is really a big deal here for the Raiders, then yeah, they probably do have to get creative a little bit with how they manage their expenditures over the next few years. It's a very interesting proposition.
Well, I guess ask yourself this, right? The 49ers would trade back two spots for 24 and a third round pick. And you know the Raiders aren't going to be taking – I guess they could take Nick Bosa.
I was
trying to lay out a plan where, like, 49ers pick up an extra one and an extra three and potentially get the right player. But I feel like Bosa, if the Raiders made that trade up, they'd probably go that route.
Here's the thing about the Raiders at four. If San Francisco goes Bosa at two and then the Jets go Josh Allen, they could easily sit there and take Quinn and Williams, but they didn't solve their edge rusher problem. And they're kind of okay on the interior. Now, that didn't stop me from, going with Quinn into the Jets yesterday, because in my world, Quinn and Williams is going to be one of the first two players picked in the draft every time for me. And the way I evaluate these players, but the Raiders at four could be in a weird spot. To me, you don't overthink it. You just draft Quinn and Williams.
Right. Don't let good players prevent you from drafting great players.
And I know you would be behind Brian Burns at that spot. And I probably would be too. I would say, okay, Burns or Williams. And if you want to go with the edge rusher for, need, to me, there's not that big of a drop off in terms of caliber of prospect, but they could be in a unique spot there. And if they don't like Burns, well, the thing about Mayock is he does like lean edge rushers. He's literally compared every single lean rusher over the last 5 years to Jason Taylor. So he's not going to be shied off from that lack of, mass. So
it's one of my storylines I'm most looking forward to is the Mayock manifestation from media over to actual personnel, and if you can see parallels between the players that he's gravitated towards in years past versus their picks, or if we ultimately do feel he's a figurehead when it's all said and done.
Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and it's only fitting that this important interruption is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Have you thought about what you're getting your loved one this year? Or maybe you want to give the gift of sweet-smelling Grundle Bliss to your partner. I'm talking about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Whether you're the only one who gets to see what's going on down there or you're one of many, do you, your partner, and everyone else a favor and introduce yourself to this revolutionary company. Manscaped just launched their brand new Perfect Package. Inside the Manscaped Perfect Package, you'll find their Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, which features skin-safe technology and will prevent you or your man from cutting his nuts. Speaking of smelling nice, let's be real. No one wants to carry around that locker room smell with them. That's why I am thankful for the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. These products keep your crotchal region from sweating, smelling, and sticking. The Perfect Package will also come with a pair of Manscaped boxer briefs that'll keep that junk feeling fresh all day. It's time to upgrade those overused pair of boxers to this new. Give the gift that will make your Valentine's Day spicy. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON to get 20% off and free shipping. Ladies, this is the perfect gift for you and your man, and men, your partner will thank you. Trust me, He will thank you. And guess who else will thank you? Your balls will thank you. 20% off and free shipping when you use the promo code Locked On at manscaped.com.
Ready for some tattle takes?
Yes. Bring them to me.
I hope that you're familiar with Yash Nijman, because that's what this one's about. This comes from Corey Kinnon was referring to Yash Nijman. He actually quote tweeted Kent Lee Platt's RAS graph about Yash Nijman that shows that he has ridiculous size and athletic ability. And Corey Kinnon said, "I've been on this guy since the combine." And then Dylan McKeege turned him in and said, "Isn't this guy absolute trash? Like Sean Oakman to a T," referring to Virginia Tech offensive tackle Yash Nijman.
Okay, so I want to be nice because Corey Kinnon, like, he's a good dude, right? So I'm familiar with him from Twitter. But I am not a fan of Yash Nijman. And I watched him get beat like a drum in several games this past year. Joe, real quick, off the top of your head, do you remember two teams who had NFL prospects at pass rusher that Virginia Tech played in the first month of the season?
That Virginia Tech – okay, wait, what did you say now?
Virginia Tech played two teams that had pass rushers in the first month of the season in this year's draft class. Who are they?
You're talking about O'Shane Ziminis. Right?
And?
Virginia Tech played they opened up with, like, Florida State. Brian Burns.
Yeah. So this guy got put through the ringer pretty quick in the season, and it did not go well for him. I think technically he's a hot mess. Now, the fact that he's a good athlete, that's good, and that potentially could get him drafted, because you know teams – are just going to fall in love with athletic offensive linemen. It happens every single year. But he is such a mess as far as I think he plays soft. I think his hands don't work particularly well. He's not very coordinated with his movements and keeping his hands and feet in chorus and framing blocks and showing good cadence as he's working off the line of scrimmage in his pass set. So he's got a long way to go. So the Sean Oakman of offensive tackles is a little harsh, because at least Nijman's athletic. Oakman's not athletic, but he's bad. Let's see. Another tattle take? Yeah. This comes from Steve Palazzolo. BFF Steve, good friend. Aaron Rodgers is the third best quarterback in the NFC North. Turned in by end zone attic.
So Mitch Trubisky, Kirk Cousins, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Stafford. And Aaron Rodgers is somehow the third best in that group. I know it seems like PFF has had their moments with Aaron Rodgers where they haven't always graded him very well. I remember there was a game on like a Monday night or something in the last few years where Aaron Rodgers was like 24 of 25 for like 300 something yards and four touchdowns. And they graded him with like a below average grade. And they're like, "Well, Aaron Rodgers didn't make any throws that any other quarterback couldn't make." I don't know. I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the three best quarterbacks on the planet, let alone somehow being the third best in that group. So,
well, does this come down to, you know, they're grading based on what's coached as like your execution of a play? And Aaron gets off script a little bit too much. Like, that was part of the whole reason why he undermined Mike McCarthy, was like, he didn't like the calls and he got off the script. So like, I'm wondering if that might not be a part of the reason why PFF, with their ideologies and the way that they grade players, may have an impression like this. I don't want to say Steve speaks for all of PFF. I don't even know if Steve was serious, but if he was, I'm curious if that wasn't a component that factored into that.
I don't know. I don't know how you get to the conclusion that Aaron Rodgers is the third, unless he's just kidding around, which I don't know the context. Maybe he is. I'm not on board with him being
dangerous part about tattle takes is we don't know the context in a lot of these.
Yeah. Yeah, so be careful. Be careful what you tweet out there. This one comes from Andrew. He says, we should crowdfund a campaign to figure out who the heck won the AAF. Hashtag takes on takes. Hashtag who won the
Alliance of American Football.
Alliance of American. Yeah, I'm not. Nope. Not he tried to bait me there and I'm not falling for it, Andrew. Hashtag long hashtags. All right. Go ahead. What do you think here?
We know who won. The Orlando Apollos. Next question.
The Hotshots are going to tell you that they beat the Orlando Apollos.
Well, what was
but the Hotshots were 5-3 and the Apollos were 7-1.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah.
That's it.
Champs. Steve Spurrier. Champ.
Again, of course.
I kind of want to give this one to you. Can I give this one to you?
No, because I've answered this question already. Pat Stein says Daniel Jones is Ryan Tannehill 2.0.
Yeah.
It's fact.
Yeah, he is. That's a good take. But can you win 10? Can you win 10 games and go to the playoffs with Daniel Jones? Because you can with Ryan Tannehill.
If the Giants replace Odell Beckham and they start Daniel Jones, yes, you can win 10 games. They will not win a playoff game with it. Daniel Jones, there's my hot take. Daniel Jones will not win a playoff game in his NFL career.
A lot of quarterbacks won't. So that's probably true. All right. So now this is good. Now you have to deal with this from Walker Kelly, Turtle Man. He put out a slew of draft takes. Michael Fink reported him with hashtag takes on takes and hashtag tattle takes. All right. So rapid fire here, Kyle.
Yeah, just I'll give one word answers for all these to keep the line moving.
All right. These are from Walker Kelly, good friend of the pod. He says, Yanni Kajus better than Jonah Williams.
No, Yanni's good, but not better than Jonah.
Justice Hill greater than Miles Sanders.
No, Miles Sanders is my RB2. Justice Hill, I think, is RB5 or 6 for me. I have a third round grade on Justice Hill.
Anthony Nelson is edge 5.
No.
Amani Oruwariye, cornerback 2.
I could get on board with it. He's my cornerback 3.
Jerry Tillery over Jeffrey Simmons.
If you're factoring in health, sure.
This one's wild, this next one. Greg Dortch over Paris Campbell.
Fake news.
Brett Rippon, QB3.
I could understand why if you're not enamored with some of the ceilings of quarterbacks. I think Rippon's fairly safe. I think he's a potential low-end starter in a West Coast-style scheme. But ideally, he's a career backup.
Malik Reed over Jalen Ferguson.
This ain't bad. Reed's a very different build, very different play style. But I like Malik Reed a lot. They're both late day 3 guys for me. But if you want a little bit more explosiveness, I could get on board with this.
This is NFL Under Review, local experts on the biggest NFL stories.
The NFL Honors Awards Show was last week, and one surprise when it came to Defensive Player of the Year. This is Bear Motter with your Los Angeles Rams update from Locked On Rams. Aaron Donald would have been the first player in NFL history to win the award 3 straight years in a row, but it wasn't the case at the NFL Honors. That award this year went to Stephon Gilmore, and don't get me wrong, Stephon Gilmore had a great season. 6 interceptions, 18 pass deflected, 2 touchdowns. He had 53 total tackles. Stephon Gilmore won the award with 21 votes. Chandler Jones came in second with 14. TJ Watt with 10. Although Donald says this doesn't bother him, I see him putting this chip on his shoulder, working even harder, and coming back stronger in 2020, which is a scary thing for the rest of the NFL.
For more NFL news, subscribe to the Locked On NFL podcast only on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That's it.
Okay. Jay. That's all. It's just Jay. Draft guarantee. This is a good take. Steelers won't take Byron Murphy since he's a DB that is good at football. Hashtag takes on takes.
I don't think the Steelers are going to draft Byron Murphy. And the reason is because I don't know that he fits their size athleticism profile. They should take him because he's probably the best corner in this class, and they have a pretty big need at cornerback. But I don't see the Steelers, who pride themselves in, you know, size athleticism guys, taking a cornerback that is in the look at these numbers are bad, Kyle. I mean, his height and weight, 34th percentile, 37th percentile, whoa. 3 percentile for wingspan, whoa. 8 percentile for arm length,
whoa.
26 percentile for hand size.
We were not supposed to turn this into a Byron Murphy slander session.
It's not. I'm just telling you why.
It sounds like it is.
This 28th percentile for 40, 39th percentile for broad. Like, I don't know, man. His best test was 36 and a half inches on the vertical jump. I'm not concerned with those numbers. He's the best corner in this class. I feel like the Steelers will be concerned with those numbers. And because of them, they will not draft him with the 20th pick in the draft. Byron Murphy, cornerback one, in conclusion. Here we go. Peter Dadswell, welcome back. He said, Ed Oliver's best NFL comp is Geno Atkins. And if both Devins are gone and he's there at 11, the Bengals will draft him to pair the two.
Yeah, I could get on board with this. I think Cincinnati's in an awkward spot. Like, do you want to go with a quarterback? Does Drew Lock make it to 11 if he doesn't? And both the linebackers are gone, which is a clear need for them. Ed would certainly be best player. I mean, feasibly should be best player available at this juncture in the draft. So I could get on board with this take, Pete. Sure. Salvatore, Iapolo. Will Greer is better than Dwayne Haskins, but neither of them has first-round talent, takes on takes.
I would take my chances with Dwayne Haskins as a prospect over Will Greer, so that would make him a better prospect in my view. And I do agree, I wouldn't take either in the first round. Doug Farrar, this is wild. He says, and by the way, I like Dexter Lawrence more than I like Quinnen Williams, turned in by Caleb Helms. With the hashtag tattle takes and hashtag takes on takes.
Listen, you guys got to chill out with like our colleagues in the industry. I like Doug. Doug's a good guy. I don't agree with Doug's take here. And I guess I've tried to get inside the thought process here of where you would start and build that foundation. And I would assume that impression would come from feeling as though Dexter Lawrence has untapped potential as far as maybe he cuts a little bit of his extra weight, right? Like Dexter Lawrence is like 340 pounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if Dexter cuts some of that weight down, do you feel like he can get a little more dynamic? Not that he's not already super explosive because he is for his size. Or do you feel like there's some questions with Quinnen Williams? And I don't think that would be the case for Doug. So I think he's banking on what Dexter Lawrence could be if you kind of shifted around some of his mass distribution and he developed a little bit more as far as his pass rush prowess. But I'll take Quinnen, and because Quinnen just seems like his football IQ is off the charts. Like functional application of skills for Quinnen is what just really kills it for me. And then for his size, he's super explosive.
We like Dexter Lawrence.
Right.
You and I both. I mean, higher. There's some people that just want to stay away from him. I'm not that person at all. I think Quinnen's one of the special defensive right. tackle prospects.
Right. Last take of the day from Spinksy. Seahawks over under is 8.5 games for the 2019 season. Put the house on that. He doesn't tell us to take the over or the under though. I'm assuming he's saying if the over under is 8.5, take the over and put the house on.
That's what I would say. We had like a conversation in our group DM with TDN staff about some of those more eye-popping over-unders that were put out recently. And
yep.
One of them, we all kind of agreed the Seahawks at 8.5 was kind of low. I mean, with Russ, with Pete Carroll, I mean, they're going to win games. Like, and especially because in that division, you know, they get a couple, you would think, easy wins over Arizona. You kind of start the season 2-0. With that situation. So, I would very much feel comfortable taking the over here on the Seahawks. I think they had the Dolphins at 6 wins.
Yeah, I believe so.
Seems aggressive.
I don't know. Somebody in Miami media had an interesting point. Like Miami's home venue may fudge their efforts to like be totally terrible. They have consistently won like a fair amount of games in Miami just because of the home field advantage.
Do you think it's just because it's hot there?
Yes.
Like, what is that? Yeah. Okay.
So teams get they dehydrate, they get tired, they get sloppy. Like Miami wins ugly games in Miami.
When the Bills, Jets, and Patriots from the Northeast have to go friggin' to Miami in December.
Right.
It's a problem.
Or you come down like the first or second week in September and it's 105 and the humidity is 90%. Yeah.
It's always a problem. Yeah. Yeah. There's no, I mean, I get that. Yeah.
So I think that that has led to some inflated win totals for Miami over the course of the last couple seasons. Like, look at this roster. I mean, yesterday we just read the two deep for the offensive and defensive lines. Like, granted, they lost Josh Sitton, who played one half of one football game, and they lost like Cam Wake and Robert Quinn, but like, their lines are terrible. They can't dictate terms to anybody up front.
Yeah, that's concerning.
And they won seven games.
They have the Bills at six as well, Kyle. The exact same win total they had in 20. Come on.
Let's go.
The Bills are the same? The Bills are the same. Come on now.
Well, let's wrap this up before Joe gets too angry. Thanks for tuning in to Takes on Takes, guys. Submit us your takes for next week with the hashtag Takes on Takes. Or the hashtag tattle takes if you're going to tell on somebody. Just be kind, right? Don't put too many too hard on blast unless it's an egregious take, in which we will.
I passed over a couple when I put them through here. That I was like, I'm not getting into it. That's not going to happen.
That's good. We got Joe vetting him instead of me. I think that's probably a favorite. Thanks as always for tuning in to Draft Dudes Podcast. We'll be back to talk to you guys again tomorrow.